Welcome to a new episode of The Brand Called You. Today I have a very, very fascinating entrepreneur, or rather a professional turned entrepreneur, and I have followed his journey for the last decade and a half. Rahul Singh. Rahul, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Rahul is a textile engineer. He was executive director of Reebok. Then he became an entrepreneur and is currently the founder of The Beer Cafe, which is India's largest and most awarded chain. Rahul, tell us a little bit about your early professional career and some of your learnings and challenges.
So, I'll just go into my family background first. We know our family for almost 400 years.
Okay.
That's where actually happened. Before that, somebody burned the papers. Mm. We're from Rajasthan. My grandfather was an IAS officer. My father was an IIT engineer. So, the entire household was all around. You become an engineer, you become a doctor. I went to school in Ajmer, in Mayo College, and kind of a little difficult to actually go into a field like an engineering, but I did manage to join textile engineering. I did this in Bhiwani, post which I said I will run my life my way. Usually when you come out of textile engineering, you go into spinning and weaving and the mills part. I actually went into garments,
okay.
And that's how I started my line. So from a textile engineer to actually a garment technologist is what I became. Mm-hmm. I worked with Liz Claiborne, which is the world's largest at that time.
Very big company.
And then I followed into a company called Triberg. This is India's largest buying operations for a lot of brands out of US. Worked with them for 5 years. 99 joined Reebok. And I actually joined Reebok to run a brand called Rockport.
Okay.
It's a footwear brand. But in India, they wanted a kind of a twist. They wanted footwear sales along with apparel sales. And Rockport didn't have clothing. So I actually conceived the entire line. And the line came out to the point that a lot of Asian countries start buying the line from India.
Mm.
That started my journey on creating Reebok India into a sourcing base.
Mm.
By then, Reebok had signed in the US with major leagues like NBA, NHL, MLB. So long story short, we became a larger sourcing base, a huge sourcing base. In fact, our sourcing from India was larger than India sales. This is still 2006.
Mm.
And then Adidas bought over Reebok worldwide in that whole melee. The sourcing operations was not needed. Adidas has their own sourcing, and I was given a choice to actually move to Hong Kong. And at the age of 36, living in Gurgaon since 96, which means I've been, I'm almost now 23 years in Gurgaon. Everybody settled, parents have retired, moved with us. I didn't want to resettle myself or didn't want to go to another country at that stage. And that's when the entrepreneur bug bit me. So 15 years of professional and now almost 13 years of being an entrepreneur.
Wonderful. So, when you became an entrepreneur, and I remember you and I speaking then.
You were one of the first persons I met.
And you had quite a journey. I mean, the first entrepreneurial venture that you launched was in golf.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I know I visited a massive showroom.
Yes. So that's, a failure that actually stays close to my heart.
Because, and a lot of learning from failure.
Yeah. Without that, you would not, I would just call it like it's a... It's the same coin. Success and failure have to be just two sides of the same coin. If it's not together, you won't feel it. So Greg Norman as a brand was owned by Reebok for the clothing. And in this whole acquisition between Adidas and Reebok, Greg bought the brand back.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'd worked with that brand for a very long time, almost 7-8 years, I got the opportunity to take the license for India. So I got a good team. The team was an existing team. They joined me. And I started from there. So this is something that I knew about. It's something around clothing, which I was already familiar with. So for me, it was actually a natural progress. But having done that, I started to actually aggregate more golf brands. And I started to sell in India because Greg Norman started selling in India. We then got many other brands to India. And I realized that why don't we create something which could be something like a Golfsmith, between all kinds of products. So the idea was retail, honestly. We didn't find the right place for retail. In Ambience Mall, we found a very large place. I had an Australian partner at that time. And he said, let's convert this into a place where you could try before you buy. Because usually in retail, in golf, as you know, you have to be at the course and you normally sold something by your coach. You're literally on his hands and mercies. But when we go outside, even in Asia, you could actually be playing on simulators or you could try it.
I came and hit a lot of balls in your simulator.
Correct. So we actually created that. The idea was to actually play, have fun. We also were sitting in Gurgaon at that stage where everybody wanted to play golf.
Mm.
And yes, going on the course is expensive and kind of approachable. So that was the idea. But I think where we went wrong was we created a massive product because we had the large space. So it's like one of the learnings is if you have a large space, cut it down. It's not required to actually...
Don't fill it up.
Don't fill it up. We filled it up with a bar.
Yeah.
We filled it up with a cigar bar. We filled it up with a restaurant. The good news with that is I came very close to F&B, which I would have never. And I started realizing that in the business of golf, a lot of times you would have actually no shows. You know, like whenever we do an event, I literally had to press on people to say, you know what, come and play. And at the last minute, somebody, and you know this, it happens. But in the business of food and beverage on the other side, which is the finer things like malts and cigars, we had actually gate crashing. So I realized that socializing is inescapable. I think people lie by alcohol and you know, the sin stuff more than the golf part. And that's where actually it cracked it, that I want to be in the business of alcohol or alcohol beverage, to be more precise. And I think that's something which is like a social lubricant. You know, golf brings people together.
Amazing.
But I think alcohol beverage keeps them together.
And that's when beer happened.
That's when beer happened, actually, yes. And it was, again, a point from a point, I don't know anything about beer, and I was never into beer as much. It is that somebody had actually was there learning golf, or actually was going through that process. And he happened to be from the beer world, again, and professional, wanted to be an entrepreneur. And he says, let's do something, you know, in the beer world. And that's actually clear. So actually, we formed a company together as an investor. I was an investor. I'm very good with operations and back end. He was the front end and the spokesperson in marketing. And within the year, we had the first beer cafe. And that's how it began.
So talk to us about what went into putting beer cafe together.
So the whole objective around beer was, and I learned it because I learned from my partner there. Like I said, again, something that, you know, I learned on while it was. What we realized was that it was more like a funnel test. And if I look behind, you have food and beverage in F&B, right? Food has to be very specific and extremely well coordinated. From a perspective of McDonald's, to get that burger right at that price, only McDonald's can do it. You cannot actually reverse engineer it, even anywhere. If I look at food which is coming from a region, you have to be very good with that region and that ingredients. So it requires a lot of chef expertise, or let's say somebody from that field. So that was a no-no for me. When it came to beverage, we had only hot and cold left. So again, on a funnel test, we realized the hot beverage is taken over by Starbucks. It just launched. You already have the coffee giants in India. Chai was coming in place. So we thought, you know, we can't do that. In the cold, there's only two kind of cold beverages. One is non-alcoholic, one is alcoholic. On the non-alcoholic, the juice guys had not done well. I had some friends, I went and met them. They said, India doesn't drink health at all. They talk, but they don't walk the talk. So nobody wants the juice. And then it came to alcohol beverage. And again, it was a very simple test. Because in alcohol beverage, there is beer, there is wine and spirits. And I think, yes, we love spirits. India is the largest spirit country in the world. You know, we drink more spirits than anybody as much. But what it does is that it's mainly had at home. It's, you know, when you go out, you would like that spirit, but very few places will do well with that. And then it came to the point that, yeah, wine is kind of, you know, still catching on. Beer is easy. The only problem with beer when we started off was it was still a commodity. It was more like, okay, I have nothing else to do. Let me get a beer. But I think what we've done and I've achieved, I feel very happy about that. In these 6 years, we've been able to make beer cool. Beer, you have craft beers. People know about beers. People can distinguish between variants of beers. And we're very happy with what we've been able to do. You know, so
that's absolutely amazing. You know, because 8-9 years ago, I was in Toronto. And my son took me to a beer place where they had a sampling menu.
Correct.
And they brought six small glasses with six different colors, literally, of beer. So I'm sure you do the same.
We do the same, absolutely.
You've got to come and try.
Absolutely.
It. So talking of beer, you know, you say the market is beginning to change.
Yes.
I remember when I was growing up, and I'm much older than you.
Sure.
We used to have brown-colored bottle,
Kingfisher. Large size, yes.
And Pilsner?
London Pilsner.
And these were the only two beers available.
True.
So today, is the younger generation of Indians really taking to beer as, you know, as we have seen in the Western world?
So if you look at, again, we mirror trends. Global trends are mirrored in any form, whether it's automobile, whether it's telecommunication, anything and everything. What's also happened is people have gone from material pursuits to more experiential. So a brand is not really important. I'll give you an example. People, so the younger generation is actually trading up and trading down at the same time. So the same 19-year, 20-year-old will buy a hypothetically an H&M t-shirt for $10 and doesn't care about it, but would go and spend $30 on a good beer.
Correct.
And this wasn't there, let's say, in our generation now. If I put myself, I'm about to be 50, so I can't be in that generation of, you know, my first beer.
You're
was
still
a,
one generation away.
Yes, kind of, yes. But it actually gave us, my beer experience was really bad. To give you in perspective today, my beer experience was so sad. It was warm, it was a big bottle, it was a beer called Thunderbolt. It was awful, it was more like you had to kind of push yourself to drink it. And it's like the bad kiss that you have the first time. And I think now my son, who had his first beer, he's now gone to college. And the first beer when he had, he had it in the best way anybody could have. In the right glassware, the right temperature, the right experience. And I think that is where the world's moved. It's also global, like you rightly said. 30% of all the beer sold in the United States is craft.
Okay.
15 years back, it was zero. It was always mass and, you know, what you call commercially produced beers. 30% is craft. That's a lot of beer.
So help me understand, you know, what is the difference between draft beer and craft?
Okay. So overall, there are two kinds of dispense beer. Okay. As one you dispense in a bottle or a can, which is called packaged product. And one is when you draft it, which means still packaged, but it's like a bulk package. It comes in kegs and you can only dispense in a bar.
Correct.
You cannot do it at home. And this is a fresher beer because it does not have preservatives, or let's say it doesn't have pasteurization. So a lot of these beers would have a very smaller shelf life. It's great for the global footprint, carbon footprint, because you're recycling this keg. You know, because in the beer, there's a lot of packaging which goes. When you look at cans and bottles, good, they're not in plastic, but still there's a lot of, let's say, you know, you waste a lot of that. Yeah. Cartons and labels and stuff. At least here you get that advantage. That's the dispensing part. But when it comes to talking about craft and what we call commercial beers would be something which is mass produced. It's produced across the world at the same ingredients and recipes. It's replicated. But a craft will be produced in an independent brewery. It will be produced in small batches and it will be with finer ingredients. So it's almost like a malt, you may, if I have to give an analogy, and to a kind of a normal scotch. So
and
that's
would this be something that a microbrewery will make? Or is
yes,
that
so the microbrewery automatically will make craft because microbrewery makes things in smaller batches.
Okay.
So it's one batch made and you can't replicate that batch, meaning that batch gone.
Okay.
Whereas in a commercial brewery, you're producing in a very massive amount.
Correct.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So, you know, Rahul, you said that the beer bar is the most profitable alcohol beverage service
chain. Yes.
Let me understand this.
So the way it works is, what is an alcohol beverage chain? To us, an alcohol beverage chain would mean where your sales predominantly come from alcohol beverage. So, for example, if I call you a burger chain, you would be either a McDonald's or a Burger King, for example. If I call you a chain of biryani blues, then you are selling a lot of biryani. So, you know, so alcohol beverage would mean that who sells more than at least 50. Today, our sales is predominantly tap beer, which you call draft or tap, followed by food, incidentally, and then bottled beer. But overall, beer sales is about 60%. So, yes, it is 60% of sales coming out of beer. Which means, yes, we are an alcohol beverage chain if you have to be. We do have spirit sales too. We do have cocktails and spirits. So overall, we end up selling out of the 100 rupees we get in a day, 75 rupees comes from alcohol beverage. Where does the profit come in? Is because people end up spending more in the same amount of time that they would do it with other beverage chain. So if I go to a coffee chain or a chai chain, how much coffee can you have? Okay, you cannot have four coffees. You cannot have a new one. So here, the advantage we get is it's a cafe format. It's not a bar format. It's not dark and dingy. It's bright. We do 37% of our sales in the daytime, which means there are people who are coming in. So if I right now take you to some of the beer cafes right now, it's about to be noon, and you will see that people are drinking beer. There could be some of them are tourists. Some of them are on Tuesday. Could be somebody's off because he's working in Saturday. Mm-hmm. You know, the gig economy has a different way of working. And they drink beer because for them, it's a lighter beverage. And that's where we believe that the profits come in, because you have more spend per person than you would do it in any other beverage chain.
Okay.
I can tell you more bars could be making money more than that, but they won't be chains. You have one off, like you have one bar, made money and then disappeared.
Sure, I agree.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the things that I keep reading about, you know, and we all know a consumer is a very fickle customer. They keep changing.
Evolving, actually, yeah.
You know, and yet, I also was reading an article where it said that the millennials are very, very fickle. They don't want the same experience. They want to keep repeating,
sure.
Or, you know, keep going to multiple experiences.
Sure, sure.
How do you manage to retain customers?
So there are two things. People say, and I now actually advocate of that, that retention is more important than acquisition, right?
Right.
Acquiring is not that important. You know, the whole world of e-commerce is all running around something called CAC, you know, customer acquisition cost and stuff. I don't think you have to acquire a customer. If you embrace the customer, you retain it. What is your relevance is what it is. So it's consistency, which is very important. Customers or you can, will actually figure out. They will know, they will flicker, they will flirt, but they will still come back home. So we look at it from a point that you're coming back to beer. If you want the best beer experience, we are there for you.
Okay.
You could go around, you can have a cocktail, you can have beers at other places. Once you have that experience, you will know, you will come back. So we're actually a neighborhood place. The way we've been able to do is create that same consistent product across India. We're in 17 cities now. Not any chain reaches that with alcohol beverage, which is a very heavily regulated product. But look at it, my biggest competition is the governments, not the consumers here. But how do we retain? To answer your question, we believe in technology. We are a very tech-enabled company. Just to let you know, at the moment, 400,000 people use our app. Now, why would anybody use an app for something like a beer cafe, which is a pure brick and mortar? We don't have e-commerce. You're not allowed e-commerce in alcohol in India. If it was, life would be different, but it isn't. So we basically create engagement within that. So it's to do with their loyalty. It's to do with, you know, having a virtual bar on your app and a lot of stuff. So this attracts that, what you said, the millennial mindset, because they are relevant. And we have almost 26% of a repeat, because we obviously have the entire life cycle. And it's unbelievable the amount of time people come back to us. And to me, the person coming back to you, a loyalist, is far better than getting a new customer.
Right. So one more question on the beer bar, beer cafe before I move to the next step. You know, you've got 40 locations.
Yes.
And you are scaling up.
Yes.
What have been your challenges while scaling up?
Yeah.
And what do you see as you go from 40 to 100?
Sure. Single most challenge has been the regulations.
Okay.
And nobody, and I still, I don't know, you would not recall this, but I have a very good memory. And I recall about the pharmacy business you spoke about and how in Galleria you had to dig 2 feet down to actually create 11 feet and had to have 165 ml fridge and had to have a guy standing in a white, and a real pharmacist, not like somebody, you know, who's just wearing a jacket. We are in the same world.
Okay.
No transfer of goods allowed between two outlets. Okay. No central warehousing allowed. No stock transfer. Anything which is left has to be poured out into the drain.
Wow.
It's berserk. Mm. Each state in India is like another country. Liquor is the most regulated product. So we go through this whole unlearning, learning process every time we enter a state. We just entered Orissa. It's like starting from scratch. So Orissa would be very different than West Bengal, and West Bengal would be different than Telangana. So you have to go through that process. That's also the what I call the mode, because you know the process, then only you know it.
Yeah.
The other thing is, the challenge that we face is the delays. Elections happen in India with the biggest demo, not crazy, but I call it demo crazy country. And what it does is, you have elections, panchayat, municipal, general, assembly, all kinds of elections. So at any given time, you have 3 to 4 months in a year where you cannot get a license, because it's called the Achar Sanchita or Code of Conduct.
Right.
Liquor licenses are put on hold. Right now, Haryana is going through that.
Yeah.
Then you have other delays of, they will give you a license, but for some reason it'll get delayed. Like I've had Calcutta and Dehradun wait for 2 years without pouring a single drop of beer, but didn't get licenses due to many reasons. And because of that, you just end up losing that place. So there's a huge amount of non-operative loss. And then there is what we call changing goalposts. Suddenly, one guy decided, let's ban all liquor on highways.
Mm.
You were supposed to ban the vans, which is called portable drink.
Yeah.
The truck would stop, get the drink in the car and then drive in. But how will you have a hotel? You build the whole hotel.
Yeah.
You create deterrences, have policies against drinking and driving.
Mm.
You can't say cut the hotel down.
Mm.
And that's happened 2 years back. You would have read this, you know, the big, and then it was rolled back. But what it did, for 9 months, I had 9 outlets shut down with everything going out.
Mm.
So that's like unprecedented losses. So we go through that. And to me, that is the single biggest roadblock in India, is that liquor, or let's say alcohol beverage, being the largest tax contributor, is still a taboo in the minds of the babus. And they literally want to kind of not talk about it.
Amazing.
So there's no ease of doing business. It's only fear of doing business.
I agree with you. That's true. So now moving to the next part of our show, which is, you know, it's some of your wisdom on startups and entrepreneurs.
Sure.
You know, you've built two businesses.
Yes.
You've been a professional manager. What are some of the basic mistakes most entrepreneurs make?
One is, they get very emotional. They start to drink their own Kool-Aid, like you were. heard this a lot many times. I think you need to take that out of your, like, I'll give you my example. I'm very emotional with a particular outlet. Things don't work out. In our own office, we call it the Rowdy Rathore phenomenon. You know, just to give a privilege of, you know, shouldn't put any movie down. But if you have a bad movie, you already paid for it. Why do you want to sit 3 hours? Mm. And then get an aspirin after that. Just walk out.
Yeah.
If you start realizing the movie is not good, walk out. Spend your time on better things.
So
we do not, should not have emotions. You spend the money, cut your losses out and go out. That's a part. Second is what I really believe in, you know, what entrepreneurs should definitely do, if not do, is actually get a good coterie of mentors. Mm. Learn from others and get very close to them. I can tell you, on the camera, a lot of the entrepreneurs and all the panels will always talk the good part. You need guts to come out with what your failures or what your... That probably would not happen in an open format, but it can happen in your room. If I sit with you in your room in the evening, you will give me more pearls of wisdom than anything I would ever read. What you read is not normally true. And I think that is my biggest advice. And I also mentor a lot now. And the food and beverage is my domain at this point in time. I still have the clothing in me. But I really believe, and I think that would give you a sound advice, because never take advice from family and friends. Never. Take it from people who are actually going to call a spade, because we are very, you know, our family and friends will always say good. Like my mother will only say one thing, sab achha hi hoga. Like, you know, there's a fire going on, nahi, achha hi hoga. Because she cannot do beyond that.
No, and that's also...
And there's nothing, that's sense. Blessing. That's blessing. Blessings. Take the blessings, but don't take their advice.
I agree with you completely. But that's an interesting segue into my next question.
Sure.
You know, we have experienced, you know, so many startups in this country or around the world. 9 out of 10 don't make it. And yet, in our country, because of the mindset we all have grown up with and our parents and we tell our children, it's constantly, you have to come first, you have to win, you have to be successful.
Yep.
So therefore, in our country, we have stopped valuing failure.
Correct.
As a result of which, startup entrepreneurs who fail would probably be applauded in the Bay Area, but here they're put down.
Sure.
What are your thoughts on that?
There are two stakeholders here. First, the government to start with. IBC is just coming. It should have come in much earlier. It's still not very successful. Yeah. Most of the cases are being withdrawn. So today, if something goes wrong, it goes turtle, a Chapter 11, or let's say bankruptcy, or administration in the UK, common phenomena. The best of brands go through this. I have to, it's called the reset.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't do it because, okay, in India, it's normally done to evade taxes or to run away. So the mentality is if a startup fails and wants to go through it, he would be actually literally, I would say lynched literally through various, either his staff will lynch him or his creditors will lynch him or the government. He'll be seen in that light that this guy, how can you fail?
Yeah.
You're a startup, you can't fail, you know. So that's one part, which is the government policy to start with, because that has to be, like you said, the Bay Area. It supports failures, right? You can't close a company down in India. Try it.
Impossible. I've tried it.
You can't. I'm not want to run this company. I want to close it down. No. The ghost will come out of 7 years, 8 years back, and you know, you'll have to keep all the papers. The papers have died, but it's, so all that. The other is the peer pressure coming in from families and friends. I think that will change. To me, the new generation is bringing what we call average is okay. I don't have to be the best.
Correct.
And that's happening because of vocations. In my time, I was only had two professions. My sister had to be a doctor and I had to be an engineer, period. Mm. Today, nothing like that.
Absolutely.
Nothing like that. You could be in films, you could be making, you know, serials, you could be doing anything. You could be writing books. And I think it's seen as what we call a profession or a vocation you like to do.
Absolutely.
So you love what you do is what more important. I think it's changing. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
So failures will become easy.
Failures will become easy. And yet, you know, I've often said that it is important for us to keep on communicating to startup entrepreneurs that if you fail, get up and start all over.
Yeah, reset. It's a reset. We all do it in the computers also. Your phone sometimes fails. What do you do?
Yeah,
it's a reset.
I agree. So, Rahul, a few questions on you personally.
Sure.
You know, what are the three adjectives that you would describe for your own strengths?
Integrity, extremely important.
Yeah.
Come what may, my conscience, it doesn't allow anything, I will not do anything dishonest. And that flows in everybody in my household. We believe that it's rather be small than try and be greedy and do something wrong.
Correct.
The second one is passion. to me, it comes naturally. Whatever I do, I will do it with my full intent. And I am very passionate about what I do. So whether it's collecting malls or whether it's biking or whether it's anything, I would do that with full zeal. And the third for me is, this is something, an adjective I shouldn't be giving myself, but it's the humility part. At the end of the day, that's very important. Right. You cannot be driving an arrogance around it. I think you should be able to share. And I believe that, so all this I put, these are adjectives, they are supposed to be quick, but just to tell you what your purpose of life should be. Everybody has a purpose of life. That's what your vision has to be. In my case, what I believe in is that you find your blessing, whatever your blessing is, and then you share it. That's the purpose of life, if you can do that.
Very well said.
Like what you're doing right now.
Very well said. Very well said. Do you have any superstitions?
None, actually. No. My wife is superstitious. Most of our family members are. My dad was an astrologer, so he had everything. But he had a scientific way, being an IT engineer. He basically said, it's like telling you it's going to rain. I'm not saying don't step out, but take an umbrella.
Yeah.
So I think that was the more scientific way. I have actually stopped in superstitions very long back. I believe in a force which is bigger than us and almighty, but I have really no superstitions.
Amazing. That's exactly like me. So, Rahul, a lot of people, we get watched by about 15, 20,000 people
very
every
nice.
Day. And somehow people just believe that successful individuals have not had failures.
Yep.
You have spoken about
many failures. Yeah.
But tell me, what are some of your learnings from some of your failures?
First and foremost is that sometimes, and this is not just for me, this is something that's going to happen.
Correct.
A lot of entrepreneurs, or let's say a lot of startups and ideas, magic creates them. Only maths can save them. So my first mantra is, do your maths right. Your business has to sustain. If things are bad as it is today, and your funding cycle stops, your business should not suffer. Mm. Now, having said that, I know there's a lot of businesses where the funding is related to investment, relatable to investment, and says without that, we can't survive. I would say, at the end of the day, if you're in the business of commerce, or commerce is your life, I think you need to make profits. Mm. You cannot do without that.
Absolutely.
When is up to you and your cycle, but I think you need to be, because things will go turtle. The best of things will not be in your favor when tides change. Tides will change.
They will change, right?
And there'll be macro reasons. Yep. US will sneeze, we'll get the fever, and something will happen in on the border, and we'll get. I think the world's reflected off a lot of other things. So that's my first thing.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Maths.
Maths, I agree. Do you have any regrets?
So, like I said, when I attended the first Entrepreneur Summit, it was the Thai Summit, and I was in the audience, and that's the time I was working, and I realized, I'm 35, 36. My dad worked in one cement company for 30 years, and before that, 20 years. And I said, wow, he was happy in what he did, because for him, that was happiness. And for him, it was more, let's say fulfilling, where children went to the best school and he played his sports, and that's what it is. I didn't want to do that. I don't want to, be in one field for a longer time. I wanted to kind of explore more, more risk as may. And I think the only way you can do this is not by actually doing a job, but creating a job. So for me, it was more like, I think I'm a privileged few. And if I can actually create jobs, to me, that would be a bigger ticker than, actually doing a job.
Mm.
And today we have 900 people, going up to 2,000 people, and obviously their families too. There is an immense joy when somebody comes with a mithai ka dabba and says, I'm getting married, or I just bought a motorcycle or something. That's a joy you can't even actually fathom. That wouldn't have happened with in a job.
That's true.
I would have said, hey, like now it's like it's extended family. So it's a huge amount of fulfillment.
Fantastic. So my last question.
Sure.
So many young people want to start up.
Yep.
And do new business. We are becoming like the startup capital of the world.
Sure.
What would your advice be to a young person who wants to start off?
First, like I said, I've already mentioned it, do your homework well, do your maths well. Yes, it is risky, but then you putting time to it. Money is still replaceable, time isn't. So you have to value your time as to how much time you're going to put. If you're going to put your time in it, then I think you need to do your homework well. It's all about what we call, the planning then execution. Once you've done that, got your mentors on, get the right people, and then comes, let's say, if your business requires investment, then my next advice is to find the right investment partners. Really important to do that. Because a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of startups and let's say lots of companies which have become. Some of them have actually not failed, if you want to give that term, not because of the entrepreneur or the enterprises, actually failed because of partnership or because of the investment partner. You will see that the boardroom drama is actually true.
Correct.
So you have to be very careful with that. So I'm giving you, this is the startup journey. Yeah. Like, you know, these are things I tell everybody to go into. But yes, no homework, you will be in trouble for sure.
Wonderful. Yeah. Rahul, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
I think you've been absolutely incredible.
Thank you so much.
I hope to see 1,000 beer cap.
Inshallah, if everybody, people are ready to drink. The problem actually is we have a lot of issues. You know this. So I still remember, so I keep telling you, the hotel business, the pharmacy business, you know, the alcohol, these are businesses right. Which are so difficult right. to kind of use.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for the Brand Called You. Thank you and see you next week.